Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have back as a guest today David Baldacci. We'll be discussing Mr. Baldacci's new novel, Stone Cold, which has recently been published by Grand Central Publishing. First of all, David, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the show today.
Sure.
David, I'd like to congratulate you on Stone Cold. I finished the book a couple of days ago, and I really feel like you wrote a home run with this book. It's the third in the series featuring the Camel Club. And if you would, talk a little bit about the series. We won't call it a series, but you were first on in 2006 to discuss the Camel Club. Did you have any idea that this was going to go in the direction that it has?
You know, I would like to say that I sort of had that big character arc in mind, but sometimes when you have a group like that, you have so many different directions you could go in that you're never really clear until you actually do it which direction it's going to go in. I guess after The Collectors, I left, you know, this with a cliffhanger at the end with Annabelle Conroy and Jerry Bagger, and that is resolved fully in Stone Cold. But I think what really drove me when I was writing the series, I wanted to have an ultimate purpose, and I wanted to have, you know, truth revealed and background and characters fully sort of absorbed into the reader's mind and conscience. And I think with Stone Cold, that was all sort of fully realized. And I had this, you know, I had a plan with this character of Oliver Stone and his background of how it was all going to sort of play out in the end. And in Stone Cold, I tried to, you know, execute on that sort of idea of this is how I want it to be. And I don't know, it was weird when I was writing the book. I didn't know it was going to end the way that it ended when I first started writing Stone Cold. And the ending really surprised me, but for me, it was the only way that it could end when I sat down and really thought about it. And it had all the poignancy and an emotional drama and just tugged at your heart that I wanted to have, because I think that, you know, the character and the story deserved that.
Yes, and Oliver Stone, John Carr, also known as Oliver Stone, really, you put him front and center in Stone Cold, and he's a great character. And was it when you started Stone Cold, and was Oliver Stone featuring him? Was that kind of, David, was that in the back of your mind when you started? Because the plot is so, there's so many twists and turns that I can't imagine. I mean, I imagine you knew where you were going, but in terms of overall theme, was that kind of what you had in the back of your mind?
Yeah, I knew that, you know, the readers would be clamoring for the sort of, the resolution of the Annabelle Conroy and Jerry Bagger storyline that I'd left hanging in The Collectors. And I was going to address that completely and fully and take care of that. But for me, you know, the main reason to write this story was Oliver Stone, and to let you in on all the history that he had, where he was coming from, what had made him him. And that was the pleasure and the joy for me as a writer. You know, it was fun writing the Annabelle piece and her father and Jerry Bagger. That was the fun piece of the book. But the gripping emotional part of the book really came from the Oliver Stone component, and that's what I really wanted to pull off as best as I could in this. I wanted to give it the justice that it deserved, and that's where, you know, I think I focused, you know, increasingly my energies and imagination, and just really wanted to nail that.
Mm-hmm. David, another thing that I really liked about Stone Cold is that you write with a real insider's knowledge of Washington, D.C. and the espionage field. And I really feel in this novel, you really get to the impact that being in that business has on families.
Well, you know, that I think that's what's left out a lot. You have, you know, some books that talk about characters like they're like a machine, and they have no real blood, they have no real heart, they just go out and do their job, and they never think about anything, and they never have an emotional attachment to anyone. And in the series, and particularly with John Carr, I wanted to show people, you can have people like that who do that kind of a job, and they serve their country, but they're not robots. They have people they love and care about. The sort of work that they do and the decisions that they make and the actions they take all have consequences for them. And sometimes their consequences are devastating, and they pay a huge price for it, and it changes them forever. And for me, that was the whole heart and soul of this book, This is the price you pay if you want to have someone like that do that sort of thing for your country. And just so long as you understand that there can be terrible consequences for that, not just personally, but for a lot of other people, then it can happen, I guess. And people might look at Stone Cold and say, gee, I'm glad, that we have assassins like that, or gee, I'm sure nothing like that ever happens. And I think they probably both be wrong in certain respects. But they have to understand that type of service and that type of creation comes with a heavy cost.
Sure. And, David, when you're writing a book like this, how do you ever get to the end? And this book is completely believable. And some of the things that happen, your description of the intricacies of things and the duplicity involved, how do you keep from going over the top with some of these things, because you really push it right to the edge of the envelope, but it always comes off as being credible to me?
I think over the years, writers sort of developed that instinctual feel for, am I going too far or not? And I try to, give you the facts and give you, a critical foundation that you can sort of wrap your hands around and hold on while you're reading a story, saying, okay, I know this can probably happen. He's given me enough to make me believe that this is plausible, which is really all I'm bound by. But, even more than that, I try to go beyond the facts and the history and the hardware and give it the personal connection and letting you see how this personally impacts people and family and loved ones and how it can change lives. At the same time, it's changing history. History is just made up of lots of individual lives, and I tend to focus on one or two individual lives and let you see the impact. So when you have that sort of grounding, and these big events are happening across the world, but you see the impact that it's having on just a few lives, then I think it does give people sort of this touchstone to wrap their arms around and say, I can believe this would happen because these big things are happening and they're having an impact on these people that I've grown to care about. And I could see if I were in their place, this is what it would be happening to me. I could see all these things seem very plausible. And so I try to take the extraordinary and whittle it down to the extraordinary focusing and impacting on a very few lives. And that's what gives people, I think, that attachment. It's happening to these characters they've grown to care about. And that's what keeps them reading, and that's what keeps them, saying to themselves, this really could happen.
Mm-hmm. My guest today is David Baldacci. We're discussing Stone Cold, published by Grand Central Publishing. I'd also like to mention that The Collectors is now available in paperback. David, another thing, when I finished the book, I thought to myself that I think there was a feeling a few years ago when the importance of Russia, the Soviet Union, was diminished, that the Cold War was over. And when I read Stone Cold, I really liked your take on the fact that the Cold War is not over.
It's not. And a book I'm working on now sort of addresses that even more sort of front and center, but it's, it's one of those things where a lot of people actually would love to see the Cold War come back. At least they feel like they know the enemy, and you have, the predictability of mutual assured destruction, which some people would take over the, people randomly running around trying to kill themselves and everyone else. But yeah, the Cold War I don't think has ever really been over, because, and as you see sort of the progression that Russia makes, probably in a direction not many of us would like to see it go, that, I think, in reality, you'll see that head coming, rearing its ugly head again and again, and I think the direction that we have as a country may change dramatically from where we are today, where everything has been focused sort of on the Middle East, while, our greatest terror right now is a renegade Islamic terrorist getting a nuclear suitcase bomb and then detonating it in a city. I think most people, and certainly, generation, the younger generation, people under 30 or 40 years old, haven't really given Russia a whole lot of thought and probably don't even realize that Russia has about 2,500 nuclear warheads that they can deliver to any spot in the world. And will that ever happen? I don't know. Should it be a concern for us? Well, yeah.
It sure
should be a concern for us. So I think that the Cold War, we haven't seen the last of it, and I think it might get a lot colder.
Mm-hmm. David, with the focus on terrorism and the changes we've had in our country in the last few years, when you're talking to people that you know that give you the kind of information that allow you to write the kind of novels you write, has their perception of you changed at all with the popularity that you've achieved and the readership that you now have?
I think that, you know, a lot of them read my books and they see the research and work that goes into them, which gives them, I think, a certain comfort that they know I'm out there trying to get it right. I don't always, you know, put their particular agency in the most favorable light sometimes, you know, it's in sort of a very unflattering way, but I've never found that they really care that much about, you know, how I perceive their agency or their work so long as I'm factually accurate about the sort of work that they do. And these days, you know, my career, I guess, has evolved to such a point where I have a lot of them calling me up, you know, wanting mm-hmm. to go out to lunch with a particular agency or, you know, they have a story that might interest me. Because I think that they believe I play fair. And having read my books, they are impressed with the hard work that's gone into it, trying to make it accurate. So I think twofold. One, I think they enjoy the stories that I tell, and I think they believe the stories are completely plausible. And also that I get most of what they do right, and they appreciate that. So, but yeah, obviously after 9/11, you know, things have changed, and people are certainly more tight-lipped about, you know, things. And I always am very upfront with them. I never want classified information. I would never write about something like that. I've been in many meetings when I'm doing research, and agents will say, I'll tell you this, but it can never end up in a book. Mm-hmm. That's happened many times, and it never will end up in a book because that's just the way that I, you know, I operate. I would never take something like that and try to abuse it. So I treat my relationships with these people, you know, as ones of, you know, integrity and trust and confidence and respect, and I think they feel the same way.
Sure. And David, I remember when we discussed the Camel Club that you had mentioned that occasionally the government will actually hire writers to kind of write scenarios, like doomsday scenarios, not necessarily doomsday, but kind of plot out things as a way to figure out how the world works. And is that still going on these days?
Yeah, it is. They'll occasionally, from time to time, they'll have these think tanks, either in Washington, D.C. or elsewhere. They'll bring in, like, novelists and screenplay writers, playwrights, and put them in a room, and they'll divide them up into teams, and they'll say, you know, there's a pipeline in the X geographic area that might be vulnerable. Tell us how, and here's how it's sort of basically secure. Tell us how you would get around those security measures. Well, I've had, you know, an email that's come to me from a contractor to Homeland Security, and they'll say, how would you blow up the Super Bowl? If that was your assignment as a terrorist, how would you go about doing it? You know, and they want me to write out my scenario and send it to them, and they would look at it, analyze it, and reverse engineer it to make sure it would never happen. So, yeah, that stuff still goes on. I think that, you know, the government agencies, you know, they're all trying to think outside the box and use assets outside, you know, the normal agency parameters to help them do their job better. I heard a statistic a while back that the CIA employs as many independent contractors now as they actually have full employee agents.
Wow.
And I think we've seen that, like in Iraq, I think there are as many independent contractors over there as there are soldiers. And we've seen all the stuff with Blackwater, obviously, too, that hasn't worked out all that well. But I think the agencies these days are really looking outside the box and trying to get an upper hand.
That's fascinating. And David, if you would, talk for a minute about Harry Finn. I thought he was one of my favorite characters, just a very, very complex character and almost kind of like a James Bond kind of character.
Yeah, and Harry Finn, I really liked Harry. And Harry's character was difficult to write because he was one of those characters where the reader reaction was going to be dicey. You know, it's easy to write a character where you want people to love. You just write it that way and you expect people to love them. Or a villain you want them to hate, that's fairly easy to do that. With Harry, at some point you liked him, at some point you didn't like him, or you didn't know whether you were supposed to fear him. Was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? How could he possibly be both? So his character was complex. I was really straddling a very fine fence trying to keep readers, you know, not really sure about how they were supposed to feel about Harry Finn until later on in the book. He's a member of a Red Cell team, and those are actual teams that operate in the United States, mostly under contract to Homeland Security, and their job is to test, you know, security measures of various types of facilities and industries, everything from the airline industry to, you know, companies that manufacture vaccines for bioterrorist type stuff. And I needed to have an enormously strong motivation for Harry to do what he had to do in this book, and when you have motivation like that, you need motivation like that, it typically comes down to something that is so close and so personal that it would be plausible that someone would want to do, you know, such dangerous stuff to achieve a goal like that. Mm-hmm. And in this book, it had to do with family, it had to do with revenge, it had to do with a sense of justice that had never been realized and that Harry desperately wanted it to be. And it had to, you know, do with righting a wrong. And sometimes you do bad things to right wrong, and that's what Harry Finn's mission was. It was almost a little schizophrenic to write him, you know, a scene where he's killing someone in a very clever way, and then have him, you know, in the very next page take his daughter to swim practice, or take his son to baseball game and watch his son play baseball. And I think for the reader, they're almost going to have a little bit of emotional whiplash reading about Harry Finn, because it's like, oh my God, he just did this on this page. Over here, he's a doting, you know, father. How do I figure this guy out? But I think sometimes so much fun in a book is a reader trying to figure out a character. Who is this man and what makes him tick?
Mm-hmm. David, now that Stone Cold is finished and is put to bed, what are you happiest about with this book? You started with the Camel Club, then the Collectors, now Stone Cold. What did you achieve with Stone Cold that you're most pleased with as an author?
You know, I think the full resolution of Oliver Stone / John Carr's character. I think that he's at peace, you know, and what he needed to do in his life to bring it sort of full circle, he was able to accomplish in this book. And at the same time, he was a man who had spent the last 30 years of his life trying to atone for all the bad things that he had done, albeit employed the government and under orders, but he had still done them. And that took an enormous personal toll on him, and obviously he lost his family because of it. So he spent all these decades trying to atone for his past sins, and I think that he never really felt that he could, but I felt at the end of this book that he had come full circle, and he felt that he had finally accomplished that goal. And that's what I felt most, you know, the best about bringing that character arc to closure, at least on this part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it sounds funny talking about a fictional character doing that for, but for me, you know, having spent 3 books with him and gotten to know him very well as you can a fictional character, it was important for me to do justice to that finality of how the book had ended and to make sure this guy got what he deserved.
Sure. David, I really appreciate your time today. Congratulations on Stone Cold. It's a home run, and best of luck with it. And I look forward to getting caught up with you when the next book comes out.
Terrific. I enjoyed it too.
Great. Okay. Well, you take care.